Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
McDonald's is facing a new lawsuit alleging pervasive sexual harassment of female employees. It's the latest high-profile charge against McDonald's, which is already dealing with some two dozen similar legal claims. And it comes just over a week after McDonald's fired its CEO, paying him a multi-million dollar exit package after he had a consensual relationship with a subordinate. NPR's Alina Selyuk is here in the studio to tell us more about this, and we should warn listeners that our conversation will contain some graphic details of the alleged harassment. Hi, Alina.
Hello.
Tell us about the focus of this new lawsuit.
So at its heart, the lawsuit accuses McDonald's of, quote, culture of sexual harassment. The lawsuit has one named plaintiff who shares her story of working and facing routine abuse and harassment at one franchise location in Michigan. But she filed it as a class action. So more than 50 women who worked at that location might join the case if the court allows it. But her bigger message is that McDonald's, as a corporation, should take responsibility for what the lawsuit calls systemic and institutional problems with how male workers treat their female colleagues. McDonald's has said it is committed to a safe and respectful workplace.
What are the details of this particular case in Michigan?
So the former McDonald's employee, her name is Jenna Reese, says her store had a male manager who routinely harassed her and other female employees. The allegations run for pages and they are disturbing. The lawsuit says he grabbed her breasts and buttocks and called her names, accosted her, pulled her hair, made sexually charged comments. Here's Reese talking to reporters today.
I constantly told him to stop. I told him no. I told him to leave me alone. I spoke up. He would threaten to fire me. I constantly lived in fear of losing my job for rejecting his sexual advances, abuses, and threats. It was so hard for me to go to work, but I had to physically force myself to go and needed the money, and I felt like I had no choice.
Reese says she reported this coworker to the general manager, but the behavior continued. Her case has the backing of the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund and the American Civil Liberties Union, and she alleges that McDonald's failed to address and therefore enabled this.
Now, you said that McDonald's stressed its commitment to a safe and respectful workplace. What else are they saying about this suit?
So that was in their statement that they issued today, that this is a deeply important conversation and they're committed to. They pointed to examples of things they've changed in the recent past, a new hotline, a new anti-harassment training they've added. For several years now, workers have been staging walkouts at McDonald's over low pay and harassment. They are accusing McDonald's of not doing enough to crack down on rampant sexual harassment. Lawyers say 50 claims are pending against McDonald's in courts and with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. But the big tricky thing about McDonald's is that the vast majority of its locations are owned by franchisees. They're not corporate, more than 90% of them. Hmm. McDonald's says it doesn't really run these stores. So, for example, that anti-harassment training, McDonald's says it's been added to all corporate-owned restaurants. But when it comes to franchisees, McDonald's says it is, quote, encouraged by the progress in negotiating with the owners.
Alina, put this into context for us. And many different companies right now are facing similar accusations of a culture of abuse where they're just not doing enough to root out sexual harassment.
Yes, and it's particularly problematic when you talk about workers who make minimum wage. This has played out in the hotel industry, lots of fast food stores. There have been different lawsuits against Hilton, Marriott, Wendy's, Burger King, and These are workers who may not have time and money to grapple with the weight of these issues, and more to the point, they might be stitching together income from multiple jobs to support their families. They are afraid of retaliation, meaning losing hours or even jobs, and so they are afraid to speak out.
That's NPR's Alina Selyukh with details on the latest lawsuit against McDonald's. Thanks, Alina.
Thank you.
Black brother.
Black brother of hell.
Put your hands behind your back.
I feared for my life.
Put your hands behind your back, you can't
like I was completely powerless in this situation. They didn't acknowledge my EMT identity. They didn't acknowledge my uniform.
Rory Stearden, an EMT with McCormick Ambulance, is the man these LAPD officers are commanding to put his arms behind his back.
This is a traumatic life experience for me.
On August 22nd, Dearden was in the middle of an emergency transport. In the back of the ambulance was this LAPD sergeant. Dearden and a patient who was reportedly having a seizure and had possibly been the victim of a sexual assault.
What I did was I laid her down supine, so flat, and I tightened up the safety belts. Due to her flailing body nature, I needed to tighten her down. It's a safety hazard in the moving ambulance.
But he says the woman refused to stay in place.
She had a history of autism, so there was kind of a communication barrier. So where she wasn't fully responding to what I was saying.
Suddenly, Dearden says the patient managed to unstrap herself.
There was a huge concern, you know, and once she's off the gurney, I can't dictate her behavior. You know, a person is very capable of opening the door of an ambulance and jumping out.
Immediately, Dearden says he pulled the patient back onto the gurney. And that's when Dearden says the sergeant accused him of assaulting the patient.
By me physically restraining her, just doing my job, it was a necessity because the patient was becoming a danger to herself.
The sergeant then called for backup. Officers arrived and arrested Dearden.
While this is going on, what are your thoughts? What's going through your mind?
Very fearful situation. I didn't know it was a taser at the time. All I see is a weapon in my face, you know? And I became aware it was a taser because he was threatening to shoot me. He said, I'm going to tase you.
This should have never happened.
Howard Allen Levy is Dearden's attorney.
Yeah, you hear it and you go, that's not believable that they would arrest somebody that absolutely did nothing except his job.
But it happened. Dearden was handcuffed and taken to jail.
I went to jail. I was scheduled on stage at the Masked Singer. I worked for CBS Studios, and I was in custody. And I got a no-call, no-show as a result. And I was indefinitely removed from the schedule.
What saved Dearden from being charged with assaulting a patient was this. The body cam the sergeant was wearing during the alleged assault.
After they looked at the body cam, what did the LAPD do?
No charges were filed. I was released with just a misunderstanding as an explanation.
We reached out to the LAPD to get their side of the story, but we were told the department does not comment on personnel matters.
What do you think about that?
That is unacceptable. You know, this is my livelihood. This is my job, my career. This completely devastated my life overnight.
Reporting from Los Angeles, I'm Gina Silva.
Context of white supremacy. Gusty Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Friday, November 15, 2019. So I have been told this is our weekly forum, Neutralizing Workplace Racism. This is not a broadcast for spectators. There have got to be tons of spectacular things to do. It is getting close to holiday season. You can be thinking about recipes, healthier recipes, if you're going to participate in all the madness coming up. Sure, there are sporting activities. Got to be football madness happening. Pumpkin carving. Lots of things that one could be doing as opposed to spectating. This broadcast is for sharing strategies, counter-racist tactics to neutralize racism, white supremacy in the workplace. People have figured out things that work well to solve problems. Outstanding. You don't have to deal with being pawed, people grabbing your hair, sexually terrorizing you on the job. You don't have to deal with any of that. They don't accuse you. You go about the business of doing your job. You don't get accused of things. Don't get arrested on your job. Simple things. You need a day off. You need sick time. No problem. With ease. That's what we need. If you have figured out how to solve any of those problems so that they are never an issue for you, you should make sure. Use your fingers. Go across that phone pad, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943, pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Certainly, if you have difficulties, any problems, and you would like counter-racist suggestions, dial in. We will do our best to try to offer strategies, methods of solving problems without creating new problems. Again, that is the standard in the workplace. Really, that's the counter-racist standard in general. Solving problems without creating new problems. But the number again, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943, pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Email always works if you have suggestions, logic, if you have a situation you're dealing with and you would like input, untiljustice@gmail.com. Untiljustice@gmail.com. We can read your commentary on the air. If you have any concerns about being anonymous, you don't want to be recognized, or you're just not able to dial in, drop an email and we can read your commentary live on the air. Before I address some of the audio segments that we heard at the beginning, the book club aired yesterday. Paul Robeson, The Artist is Revolutionary. We did segment 4 and we aired about an hour or so early just so that I would have time to attend a author talk here in Seattle. Azor Savage is a young, non-white, trans-identified individual, 16 years old. And she wrote this book about white supremacy in the Seattle school system. And I attended the event with the intention of recording so that I could upload it to the podcast, and I somehow failed. I've done this before, and I somehow just failed royally to capture any portion of the audio. I was horrified because I was able to ask a question. I will give more detail about this tomorrow on the compensatory call-in, but I was able to ask a question. You don't want to be a spectator. This program is not for spectators. And anytime that they have events on racism, white supremacy, where you're able to speak, even if it's just to ask one question, do your best to use that platform. You never know who will hear that question. Sometimes just asking a question can have a huge impact. Make sure you don't spectate if it's about racism, white supremacy, and directly or indirectly, all things are. Anyway, so the audio segments that we started with, McDonald's, allegations of widespread sexual harassment. We discuss unwanted touching, sexual assault of all sorts against males and females in the workplace on a weekly basis and in all forms, whether it's comments. We have had Thomas in New York dialed in about the male employee who attempted to zip up his pants in the hallway. We have had white women who made sexual comments to black males. We've had white women who hugged black females even after they made it known that they didn't want to be hugged. And then they started to sneak up from behind and do the hugging. We have had a wide list coming from behind and rubbing the shoulder. We have had an array of touching, starting out with sexually promiscuous remarks and escalating from there. I have said consistently, you need to have a code, and that's one that you should practice. If they say something, if they attempt to touch you, I quote the great Walter Beach, 2-time guest on The Couch, you cut it off at the knees. The very first time it seems like it's going in that direction, you do not minimize. This is not a so-called microaggression. This is something that is going to escalate. That's what you heard in the sound clip. Pulling hair and this, and it's going to escalate. Go ahead. That's one that you want to put your stand on your square. Have lots of black self-respect. If it's touching, you're moving away. Whoa. Do not ever touch me again. That is totally unacceptable in a workplace, or however you know, whatever phrase that you want. But I mean, it is said with as much. If you need to thank Dr. Francis Cress Welsing, if you need to think of people in your family who had lots of black self-respect, who motivate you, inspire you in that manner, think of them, channel their energy, and bam, lots of self-respect. And that's what I said about practice that. That's something that you can just practice. This is what I say. If it's touching, we talked about that before. We had people, they practice, snatch away. And then you know, whatever statement that you say, but practice that, because it is so common for males and females. If you're an attempted parent, talk to you. If you have a child that you know is going to be entering what they call the workforce soon, have that discussion with them at an early age. That's one that you want to make sure they have solidified so that they're not stunned. Unfortunately, hopefully not. And hopefully way, way, way down the road. But I mean, unfortunately, just with the system that we have, they will be prepared and they can sparkle with their codification. Hands off. Boom. You picked the wrong victim, buddy. Codified. I was prepared for that. You picked the wrong victim, ma'am. Was prepared for that. Got attempted counter-racist parents. And documentation. That's one where it can also help if it's going to be repeated attempts. Documenting so that you're reporting this misconduct and keeping a record that it was reported, so that you can show these incidents were happening this date, time, this is who it was reported to, and this is what was done or this is what was not done to correctly resolve the situation. The second audio segment, equally troubling, the black EMT victim. You heard that they get a patient. Sexual abuse, they mentioned that as well, how widespread it is. That's why I said you got to, it's mandatory. As I said, they said it seemed like this victim might have been a victim of sexual assault. And so the EMT, he's trying to subdue her, you know, because she's in shock. And they're saying that the ambulance is moving. She's not staying still. And he's trying to strap her down to the gurney so that they can keep her safe and transporting her to the hospital. And somehow in all of that, he ends up being accused of assaulting this patient for just trying to get her back down onto the gurney. That's what I mean about pitfalls of jobs where you might have to actually put your hands on someone in the era of Bill Cosby and Me Too. Now, I don't know if this was a white woman, the patient. They didn't have a photograph or what have you. And I think it was a white enforcement official, because they did have a video, and I think you could see it was a white female officer. But I mean, and this, the video that I saw, this is a highly melanated black male, the EMT, who gets charged here. So him just in the course of doing his job, all of a sudden it becomes the man knot, rapist. Oh, my goodness, you unhand that white woman. Or it could have been a non-white, you know, female. You unhand her, you savage. What are you doing? Get them to call for backup. Coon has lost his mind. And it's too white. And then all of this is, oh, it's just a little misunderstanding. You know, these coons get carried away. Thought he was trying to rape her, but turns out everything is all right. Just keep an eye on the coon from now on. Sorry, wasted everyone's time. I mean, and I appreciate that he said, you know, this was a traumatic life event. How could it not be? This is not even just, you know, I was in my car driving while black, the tackiness of that phrase. This isn't even that. This is, I was on my job functioning as a health professional attempting to save someone's life. And in the process, I was accused of being some sort of black thug rapist and arrested. Like, are you serious? Like, traumatic life event. The man, it sounds like another case of that old black male privilege, black male patriarchy just ruining the world. Toxic black masculinity. Yes. And I've even thought of this in a different context earlier today. Alison Manswell, she was a guest on the program in 2016. She wrote the book Lean In, and she talked about how she reluctantly would tell black males to make themselves smaller, don't talk too loud, don't stand over or too close to white women, white people in general, sometimes on the job, because you might make them fearful, you might intimidate them. She says sometimes she almost feels as though she's having to tell the black males to emasculate themselves in order to function in a workplace environment. I was thinking of that earlier, and then with this segment, whew, even being an EMT. White genetic annihilation. Dr. West. Would have loved to hear the grandsisters' thoughts on that. Okay. Before I get to other folks' thoughts on workplace racism, I have to, unfortunately, go first for workplace racism. Not excited about that at all. And even more disgruntled about having to take up more time talking about yoga and Gus T, because that is not the most important component of white supremacy racism. And I'm even reminded about Dr. Kanban's important emphasis on coming to a conclusion on topics. You study, you make your analysis, you come to a conclusion. You certainly can revisit because things too change. So sometimes you come to a conclusion and then you come back and reevaluate. And after some time, maybe things have changed. You have to come to a different conclusion. Absolutely. But coming to a conclusion, so we're not just processing and processing, and I don't come to a conclusion, and then bam, we can pivot from there. So hopefully we won't have any more, at least in the context of me practicing sort of a thing, incidents of racism. But this is workplace racism. So let's see. Most yoga instructors, if you teach at the yoga studio, you are able to practice at the yoga studio. That's included. I wouldn't necessarily say it's encouraged, but generally it's not a bad thing, because you would be able, they use the word community a lot for people who practice. So you would get to meet presumably other students. And you would be able to promote yourself, your practicing, so they could see if you, you know, have a strong practice or what have you, where you might be able to teach them some things. You can let them know about your class or if you teach privately and all that, so you can, you know, promote and mingle, all of network, as they say. Just networking. So generally, you know, it would be a good, and you can support, you know, your other students. They say that that's, I think they have some professions where you can support other people that are doing similar work, where it's not so cutthroat and competitive. It can be certainly with yoga, but that generally is considered a good thing as well. So I enjoy being able to practice in a heated environment. Certainly I can practice on my own at my residence or wherever, but I enjoy being able to practice it in a heated studio. That can be nice. And being able to have all of the cool yoga equipment that can be helpful with the practice. So there are benefits to going to the studio. I've talked about that before. So I would practice at home, practice at the studio now that I'm teaching. I've talked about there can be pitfalls, extra cautions, I would say, if you have a job where you might be in your work environment, even when you are not on work hours. That can be interesting and might, you know, pose additional codification, or I won't even say might, does require additional codification. Because I'm just thinking like a school teacher or something like that, where you might be at an athletic contest, even though you're not teaching technically and it's not school hours, you certainly would be held responsible if you're out in the stands yelling coon this and nigger that. I think that might cause some workplace issues for you. So if you have one of those jobs, you're going to be in the work environment, not on hours, you still have to be codified. And Gus T certainly is mindful of that. So I go practice this week a few times at the studio. And a part of the internship for the program that I just finished before I got hired was help with your resume, you know, helping you develop your career as a yoga instructor. So I say, hey, I'm going to see if I can get some help polishing up my resume and still learning, trying to get better, trying to improve. And so I contact the white woman studio owner. She says, absolutely. Let's do it. Let's set up a time and we'll go over it and I can see, you know, what tips I can offer. Great. I'm sure she can offer some great, you know, suggestions. But it was something ominous in the email. It was we can meet and go over the resume this Wednesday and other things. And I thought, I don't ever expect anything good to happen with that. Like, something happened. Like, oh no, what did I do? Have I been from something? And so I go in. And I'm still in the forefront of my mind thinking, you know, resume, because I hadn't taught since Sunday. So this is Wednesday. I hadn't taught in a couple of days and, you know, nothing quirky or odd happened when I taught last. So go in. I'm excited about working on my resume, especially because I had just glanced at some of the openings. And there's so many job openings to teach yoga here in the Seattle area. And I put a specific number. I said I wanted to be over $25 per hour. And there were quite a few job openings that were that and substantially over that per hour. And I said, oh, yeah, I should polish my resume and get some of my coins back from white people for yoga. So I go in to polish up my resume. I'm excited seeing their openings, thinking that, oh, yeah, I could do some of these. In fact, I was even thinking, I wonder if they have yoga at sea. I would love to be, especially if I could get someplace warm. If they have Wi-Fi on the boat, I could teach yoga one or two classes a day, still do the program, travel, best of all worlds. I said, I'll have to check on that. Yoga at sea. Anyway, but all of that polishing the resume. So going in to polish my resume, and I get there, and she says, well, I got feedback that you took a class this morning. Did you hear a white person, or she didn't say white person, but did you hear another student, a man, saying something to you in class? And I said, no. And so now I'm thinking back to the class, like, did somebody say something? And I'm thinking, like, no, I don't remember anyone saying anything. Like, there was the student to my right, I remember specifically because it was a non-white female, and she has come to classes that I have taught consecutively over the past couple of weeks. So I remembered her. I remembered her name specifically. That's something that they tell you as a yoga instructor, to make sure that you do a good job remembering students' names so that you can be personal and, you know, call them out by their name in class to give encouragement or support or kudos or whatever it's going to be. So I remember speaking. That's part of what I mean about why you would go to class as an instructor where you teach, because then you can do that. You can see, like, oh, there's a student, and hey, how you doing? Good to see you. Okay, Harriet, blah, 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 and you're working on this. Like, you could have a little chat about the postures or whatever else, or vegan meals, whatever, counter racism even. Anyway, so she was directly next to me, and we did talk before class, but I don't remember. She didn't say anything to me during class. I'm like, no, like, I don't remember that at all. Like, what did he say? And so she says, well, the instructor said that this white man yelled at you and said, dude, during the middle of class, you're breathing too loud. I was flabbergasted, flummoxed. Just for context, as I'm sure many of the folks listening Do not take a lot of yoga classes. In yoga classes, you will frequently hear focus on breath, pranayama, life force. You know, you stop breathing, you stop living. And when I say frequently, like to put numbers on it, right? Like for the 2018 calendar year, I took approximately 800 yoga classes. I would say in at least 100 of those classes, you would hear, your neighbor should hear you breathing. So just to put numbers on that, if you were to take a class, one class per day, 7 days a week, I think at least one day a week you would hear, your neighbor should hear you breathing. Like, it's not supposed to be a quiet breath. In fact, if we're not hearing breathing in the room, there is a problem. So, you know, this is not church and shh, it's breathe. In fact, you will also frequently hear, take up space, be big, take up space. You'll hear these types of cues in class. So she said that this white man yelled at me, dude, be quiet. And that I guess at least one other person had reported me for breathing loudly in class. And that she even had noted that my breathing was loud in class. She had to amplify her voice. I was flabbergasted. Now, this does relate to workplace racism directly and indirectly. As I said, that this conversation happened, I was coming to talk about my resume when this was brought up, and this ended up being a 40-minute conversation. In fact, this conversation went so long, I thought we were going to talk about the resume. She looked at the clock, said, oh, wow, it's 6:10. We were both going to take a class at 6:30. So we both, you know, now have less than 20 minutes. Like, man, we're supposed to talk about your resume. We've been talking about you breathing loudly and disrupting the white students in class for the last, like, I don't know, 35, 40 minutes. As I said, I was flummoxed just because I'm thinking resume and then the nature, like breathe, like it was. I thought of the hashtag, and you know how I feel about social media and all of that, but I thought of the hashtag, I can't breathe. And I said, this is not even like funny. Like, breathing too loud. And then I thought on another level, like, wow, if I had heard this white man yelling at me in a class, I'm not sure how I would have responded. On one level, I may have left the class. On another level, I may have ignored him and continued to breathe loud for the rest of class. Like, I'm not sure. And then the other element would have been, well, I'm an instructor here. I don't know. Should I hush? Or I mean, it was just, wow, like breathing too loud in a class. Anyway, as I said, there are challenges and potential pitfalls to being in a work environment when you are not actually working. My conclusion for this was the same thing that many Cows listeners had said before, that, you know, there is simply no reason to practice with white people. I don't think, at least for me, it does not seem constructive to practice with white people where I teach, because it seems like there would likely be the same types of issues that many non-white people have reported in going to yoga classes, where they have been mistreated, and the environment is just not welcoming, supportive to non-white people. If in fact. It is not out and out terroristic in its treatment of non-white people, I would say especially black people. But yeah, I just decided it's no reason to have my personal practice disrupted by having to think about, am I breathing too loud? for the white people in class, or am I too large? Because that was brought up too, you know, you're a larger male and could be a lot for some students. Like, I would rather just practice on my own and not have to deal with that. And I can just teach, go in, teach, and then practice on my own. That way I don't have to deal with those concerns. But that was jarring, I will say. And I suspect that that sort of thing has happened to a lot of black people, where that's where it can be just a really unsettling, really nauseating, stressful, anxiety-filled experience working around with whites because just, yeah, I mean, you just wouldn't be, you would just have to constantly be prepared for things like that. That's like when Mr. Fuller, when he says, like, do not expect correct treatment, like, I feel like that is a great illustration. Like, chastised for breathing too loudly in a yoga class. Context of white supremacy, indeed. Woo! I did teach yesterday. No accusations, I don't think. Let's see. I will read one email before I proceed. That would be another illustration of black male privilege, I suspect, as well, being chided for breathing too loudly in yoga class. Black male privilege strikes again. Woo! All right. Uh-oh. Let's see. We have one of our listeners wrote in. He actually has a blog post where he shares about racism, white supremacy. And he wrote in a report about references. I was just talking about references. I had to get my references together so that I could teach yoga. Might need references in the future that I am able to breathe in a mild manner that does not disrupt other students. The report reads, Workplace Racism Report for 2019-11-08. On November 1st, I received confirmation that I successfully passed an IT certification exam. Whoopee! For the purpose of this report, I will refer to this IT certification as the ABC certification. After passing the ABC certification exam, two additional steps must be completed before an ABC certification is awarded. Number one, endorsement by someone who's already ABC certified. Number two, validation of work experience by your endorser. Prior to taking the exam, I spoke with a non-white black male who confirmed that he would endorse me. I reached out to three references, all who are white, asking them if the ABC endorsement could contact them to validate my work experience. Two of the three references confirmed it would be fine. The third didn't reply. The third reference, a racist man who I'll refer to as Jim, has always been prompt in his responses when I've contacted him in the past. This certification increases the chances of pay raises and job promotions. And I highly suspect that these are some of the reasons that Jim doesn't want me to use him as a reference. On November 6th, I reached out to Jim again. He responded, but asked if we could talk on November 8th regarding my request. I called Jim on November 8th at 10 a.m. Eastern. He answered the phone and told me that he would call me back in 30 minutes. Jim never called back. This is just a reminder that just because a racist has been a constructive reference for you in the past, there are no guarantees for the future. Very, very important. I will share this one. And again, I think so many times, and this can happen to me, this happens to a lot of us, just because someone classified as white is nice to you, whatever it is, if they buy you a brand new car, they buy you a brand new house, they get you round trip airfare to see your dying parent, whatever it is, maybe they get you all three, they get you a job, whatever. In a system of racism, white supremacy, white people, individuals classified as white, they have more power than individuals who are not white. So it is substantially easier for them to acquire these types of resources and to, you know, if they want to dole them out to you. And this has happened repeatedly throughout the system of racism, white supremacy. I even point to my man, Donald Sterling. He gave the NAACP reportedly millions of dollars, still practiced racism against a lot of black people, but watermelon day on the plantation, few million Negroes here, few million there, and then I go back to the business of practicing racism, that Negro Magic Johnson and all the rest of them. Very easy. White people can be nice. Racists, they can be nice when they want to. Super important for us to remember, just because they were nice to you on Monday does not mean they are going to be nice to you on Friday. And that's why, with those references, always important to have backups ready and to be prepared for shenanigans. I'm not surprised about Jim, you know, oh, he didn't respond. And being able to point that out. Wow. Jim normally, you know, is Johnny on the spot. He's on that phone and boop, boop, boop. He's shooting a reply back within, you know, 60 seconds or something. And letting me boop, boop, boop. No problem. Boop, boop, boom. And getting back. He's not even responding this time. I called him up. Oh, yeah, I'll get you back in 30 minutes. Just give me 30 minutes. 5 hours is gone. We're almost going home for the day. Nothing. Like, that's really irregular. Those types of irregularities, they are not coincidences when it is to your detriment. You not being contacted, him not following up about something that would enhance your career, put you in line to get a promotion maybe, a pay raise maybe, and now he's lethargic. Now he's lax about replying to you. That's not a coincidence. That is racist man, racist woman. Unless I've been misinformed. I'll post the link for this report. Always encourage folks, write about racism, white supremacy, share your thoughts, document. And for workplace racism, you can, you know, make a whole little journal online. You can make it a blog. If you want to share, you can make your name anonymous and that sort of thing. But that accomplishes the same goal. You'll have dates, times, all of that. You'll have a record, and you can help process these events, make sense of them for yourself so that you can develop, enhance your code moving forward in knowing, oh, okay, this is what I think happened with this event, and this is the best way that I'm going to, you know, conduct myself moving forward. Number again is 605-313-5164. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Certainly, if we have folks, if you have a counter-racist code for, or if you worked on your counter-racist code for dealing with pregnancy in the workplace, we are always looking to add to that because it is so shabby right now. I guess a whole lot of folks haven't processed that far, haven't thought that out, but that is super important. That is something we should work on. So if people have contributions for codifying counter-racism being pregnant in the workplace, share, share, share. If you have any thoughts about the situation, the tackiness with the references, and or Gus T's situation, or I guess in general, folks have codified being in a work environment, even if you are not on the clock, because there are some jobs where that might be the case. If you have a particular code about how you function, that might be good to share as well. 605-313-5164, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Other folks who dialed in, if you have a hand up, comments you would like to share, line should be open. Proceed, remembering this here is not the broadcast for spectators. If you are being treated well at work, people do not have any gripes about the volume of your respiration, well, then grand for you. Whoopee. You can share with us how you did that. And then make sure you are being observant of other things that are happening in your work area, because I can guarantee you there are some other shenanigans, even if they are choosing to lay off you this month, this year, this week, whatever it happens to be. Let's see. The Black African with us at the retreat this past February. Line should be open. If you have commentary, proceed.
Hey guys, thank you for taking my call. I don't do yoga classes, but yeah, is it Ujjayi breathing? I mean, it's encouraged for you to really breathe in and out deeply, loudly. And then there are moments when you are asked to breathe out, like out of your, through your mouth out. And you're supposed to do it loudly and deeply. So it's a little, I guess the person that was going to be reviewing your resume with you, I think they were just practicing racism because they should be well aware of the breathing. References. I'm not sure if this is this is not codification, but most of the time when I have references, especially with white people, like former supervisors, I don't tell them. I just put them on there, and then because I've had situations where white people would say things that don't make sense, like something like I can't, maybe like they'll say I won't be able to tell the prospective employer like how you performed. All I can do is just tell them that you worked here. Some things that I don't, things to me that don't make any sense. For a while, I guess the retreat influenced people to quit their jobs, but I also, a few months ago, quit my job. It was, well, for personal reasons, I was just not at a location that I enjoyed, and I also didn't want to work. It didn't make sense for me to work in a location that I didn't enjoy. And so I tried to get employment, employed the same job, but working remotely, because other people there work remotely, but my requests were denied. I requested a couple of times, but it was denied. And so I quit. And so I quit without a job, and I moved to the location that I wanted to. And so I started looking for work when I got there. And so I guess something that I noticed, I think this is workplace racism, because this has to do with like availability of jobs, especially now with the ADOS and like the Foundational Black Americans, because a lot of the folks that were the so-called recruiters that would contact me about prospective jobs, they were people, I think, that be classified as Indians, like from India. And that's something that I've noticed in my employment. I've worked in different areas, and I've noticed that there's like really large populations of people called Indians that have like really good jobs. And many of the jobs that I don't think, you know, you need, I guess what they would call like technical knowledge, is, I think it's just jobs where you would just need to know the English language. And I would imagine that a lot of non-white Black people from that, Black Americans would be able to do this job. And so I just think that it didn't make sense to me that these people would be here located in the U.S. and being recruiters, and that they were brought here to do this job. And I'm like, there's so many non-white Black people that could take this that could have this job. So it took me a while, but I did find a job. And I arrived at a workplace that, I guess, the managers are, are incompetent. I've never worked in such a place, but I didn't know that the managers were incompetent because, you know, I'm new, but the employees, they just gossiped about how incompetent the managers were. And so I don't, I'm still figuring, trying to figure out how to handle this. How do I communicate with incompetent managers? The manager right above us is, right above me is white. And so I'm still trying to figure that out. I don't know if people have suggestions like on that, because the person doesn't know, doesn't really understand what it is that we do, but they oversee us, which I guess is really has to do with the system. And so because the person doesn't understand what it is that's supposed to be done, they are always asking for explanations. It takes so much time to explain things to them. What else did I want to? Oh, and I had a, I have a question to you and the listeners about a, I think the person is practicing racism, just the supervisor. The person, they will, I don't know how to describe this. They will, if they see me, because, you know, I'm serious doing my work, and I've seen, I've heard him say it to other, other employees, where he will say something like, smile. Like, hey, you should smile, something like that. Or just something to do with you expressing some different emotion. Be happy, something like that. And one day I ignored him. It was like a meeting, so I ignored him, continued doing, like, writing something. And so he's like, so he says my name. And so I have to respond to him. So I responded to him by saying, I'm just trying to do my work. But I guess it made me angry. I don't want to be told to smile in the workplace. But, you know, I'm new. I don't know how to respond to this person. I don't want to be, you know, labeled as all the terms that non-white black people will be labeled as. One last thing. I witnessed a black male. I don't know how this, I think he was threatened, but I don't know if, I tried to look, I don't know if there's, I've been reading through the policy and procedures. I don't know how to categorize it, but this black male, a supervisor, it was right. So a supervisor had him and a white male. They were supposed to do an assignment. And so the supervisor asked him some questions. And so the black male was just answering honestly. And so the supervisor asked him, like, have you guys met yet? And so the black male said, no, we haven't met yet to do this, but we will meet. And so the white male, after the supervisor walked away, the white man, said to the black male, looked at him very menacingly, like angrily, and said to him, he said a metaphor, he said, I don't like being thrown under the bus. And so I that's when I looked at the situation, because it was very aggressive. He did it, and then he sort of walked away from him, but looked at him very angrily. And repeated it, like, I don't like being thrown in the bus, you shouldn't have done this, something like that. And so I'm just amazed at the situation, because I thought the black male was just saying, hey, we didn't meet. And so the black male looks at me and says, after this white man walks away, and says, you saw it, right? And he says that he's going to report him to our supervisor, to the white supervisor. So I'm brand new. So I just tell him, no, you should write it down, and you should write it down and consider sending it to HR or something. He's like, and he says to me, you saw it, right? And so I kind of look at him like, I'm thinking about it. And I'm like, is he going to ask me to be a witness? Like, So I don't know, like, I don't know how to answer him. So I just kind of look at him. I'm like, so I tell him, you should write it down so that, you know, so that it's something that you can better explain. So, but he sort of, he's excited. So he doesn't listen to me. He goes to report it to the white supervisor. The white supervisor sort of, you know, says something like, we'll look at it, you know, just, you know, we'll talk about it later. So he sort of brushes them off. And so what the white man does, the next day he comes into the office, and I kid you not, he cries in front of a higher up, a person, a non-white person, non-black person, who's the highest person in our group, and accuses the black male of calling him stupid, of calling him incompetent. So in the meantime, it's just a night, I guess. The next day, the white man already has a code, and he practices his code, and now it is the black male against this white man. And so it's sort of like, I guess, hearsay now, because now the black male is being asked about, hey, did you call him stupid? It's now changed completely from this white man really menacingly sort of to me verbally attacking this black male. And so it was such a weird situation for me. It's like a new workplace. And I'm even, you know, it's like you're reconsidering the workplace. So I don't know what I could have said differently to the black male, or I don't know how I could have assisted him better. And also, yeah, my question about the being told to smile. That's all. Thank you for taking my call.
Much obliged. The black African. Get some water. Thrown under the bus. I do say, mind those metaphors. I guess I would ask, retaliation, is that what you were thinking? Like, about whether or not, if he wanted you to be a witness that, you know, this did happen in front, is that what you were concerned about?
Yeah, I think it was retaliation, and I was wondering, like, what could I add to the situation? I guess I would just be saying what I saw, and I didn't know how to categorize what I saw, per se. Like, I didn't know if it was against the policy and procedures, but I did think that it was, I don't know, maybe it was harassment, or I don't know how to categorize it, but I thought to myself that all I would be doing was describing what I saw, and I didn't know if it would be of value, and I also thought about retaliation. It was those two things.
Appreciate the honesty. It can be difficult sometimes, too, in the spur of the moment. Like, just this sort of thing evolves, like some sort of conflict or what have you, evolves right in front of you, and trying to make sense of what you are seeing. I was thinking of that too, like being able to get policy and procedure to see where this would fit under policy and procedure, if at all. I do think it's always constructive to write these type of incidents down when they happen, date, time, the way that you were talked to, and if you are going to report it, as opposed to just going and, you know, oh my goodness, Bob said such and such and such and such. If you can sit, if it can be a typed email, date, time, and again, if it can be tied to policy and procedure, that this is not just, like I said, because they try to infantilize everything. So it'll just be, oh, you just got your feelings hurt. Put your big boy pants on. Come on. No, this was a violation of policy and procedure. That's why I said I would have to sit. Sometimes it's best to stop, even if what he's saying, that he wants to go report it, fine, you can stop and take 60 minutes. What's the best way to report this? Let's see if we can tie where this is a violation of policy and procedure. This is not just I felt bad, or, you know, this was him saying something mean. This was a violation of policy and a subversive activity, Mr. Fuller said. If you're going to report this, let's do it so that we can maximize the chances of this working out in a constructive manner. Now, the crime, because if you don't, this white man, it goes from him terrorizing to him coming in the next day and he is the victim. Oh, the weeping white man. I cracked up. Are you serious? The weeping white man. Oh, I'm a victim. He called me a dunce, called me an idiot, almost called me a nigger. Oh, he's impugned my. Are you serious? And now everybody is looking at this black fellow. Oh, man, I can't believe that you talked to Robert that way. Disgraceful. No one does it better in playing the victim in the workplace. No one. As for the smiling request, I was going to say comment request that you should, you know, smile more. We've heard that so many times. It's so tacky and cliche in the workplace. I think Allison Manswell, Lean In, I think she talked about that as well, where you immediately draw more suspicion, not smiling. I think that's in Sam Greenlee, Spook Who Sat by the Door. We said a black person smiling can go anywhere. That's how he trained. That was a part of the counter-racist workplace code that they trained in the movie and book, to smile and smile and smile when you're on the job. I would just say, and I think Roz has said before and others, if you're new on a job, I always think that's great. And just saying, hey, which you said you're just starting, and just making that clear. I am not a big smiley, jokey person. That's just not my personality. Like, I am absolutely here to help. If it's anything that I can do to help get something done, let me know. And I will do all that I can. But I'm just not. And in fact, I'm trying to concentrate. You know, productivity is important. I'm just starting. It's a lot to learn. So I'm really trying to concentrate. That's why I look serious, because I'm thinking and trying to do a good job. And I'd explain it just that. I mean, who's going to, what? Why are you thinking trying to do a good job? Tell some jokes. Tell us some funnies. It's Kevin Hart time. I mean, unless you're, you know, at a comedy club or something of that nature. If that's not the case, then, you know, that should be in the conversation. You know, we got work to do. I'm trying to concentrate. I'm just starting out here. It's a lot of new information that I'm trying to absorb. So I'm using my noodle as best I can and trying to earn my keep, as they say. Who's going to argue with that? That's what I would tell him. Particularly, I would especially tell him that if I'm starting out new at a job, that way we can get expectations set for as long as I'm going to be here. If that's 5 months, if that's 5 years, fine. I won't have to be pestered about this. And they'll just, oh, yeah, that's our old curmudgeon there. He works hard. But that's, and I've seen, you know, where they have that in some workplaces where that person just has a rep. That's why I said getting a reputation. This person doesn't gossip. And he doesn't do a whole lot of chatting and joking and guffawing. If you want to, you know, do some horseplay, you'll have to find somebody else because, you know, they are serious and about their work and do it well, help you out, but don't engage in a lot of horseplay. That's what I would stick to. The references portion, I appreciated. You said your code you've kind of developed is you don't give warning about the references. If you're going to ask a white person to vouch for you, you said you just were able to see the pattern, you would ask, oh, you know, maybe can you be a reference for me? Oh, man, I don't know. I don't think I can. Excuse me. I don't think I can say a whole lot more than you worked here and you used a little bit too much butter during lunchtime. I don't know. I can't really say a whole lot more than that. That would be helpful. Like what? What? Noting those type of odd responses, that right there, that's not a coincidence. That is racism, white supremacy. I'm not going to help this nigger get a better job. I'm not going to help them get a promotion. What are you talking about? I don't see them get anything. Like, yeah, I got amnesia. I don't remember nothing. I don't remember anything about what you did about anything. Barely remember your name. Help you get a job. That's Mr. Fuller said that in the clip. I didn't even think to play that deliberately, but that's exactly what he said in the audio segment. He said that white people on jobs, he called it the Obama effect. He said, there's no way
I'm going to have a black person come on a job and help them get a raise, have them get a promotion or make anything on a job. I'm so disgusted we had to sit through 8 years of those Negroes like you have lost your mind. I'm still trying to recoup FOMO years. I'm still trying to recuperate from that. No, I'm not giving a reference. Yeah, I don't remember nothing that you did. You have to ask somebody else. I don't remember anything. You've been late or something. So I'll just say something bad. Find somebody else. If we have folks who have suggestions for black African with, I guess, the smile situation, and I don't know, maybe some other people, if you have your own code about that, you can share, because that's such a common one with black people. You don't smile enough, or you need to smile more, or whatever it is. If anybody else, if you have a suggestion, them telling him, and he did say that this is a newer job. He kind of just got started here, so that's important, I think, because you can kind of reinvent yourself, so to speak. If folks have any suggestions about how they would deal with that, someone telling you on a job, in a work setting, that you should smile more, you know, what's wrong with you? Come on now, show us those pearly whites. What would your response to that be in a newer work setting? If you have suggestions for that, or if you have your own situation you would like to share, 605-313-5164, the code 564-943, pound again, not for spectators. If you have a thought or two, chime in. While folks are getting their thoughts together, hopefully not spectating, I will get through some of our other emails. Let's see. Black female. Wait a minute, I'm actually going to take a little water in before I read. All right, much better. Woo. Drink more water. Last week, I wrote in on how a white male at my job got fired for not knowing how to do his job, and you were right. Uh-oh. They knew he didn't know what he was doing, but let him linger because I asked another white coworker what happened, and she told me they had to let him linger to get evidence and catch him in the act of messing up enough times to terminate him. I do think he did something to off code, because the whites who fired him sent an email explaining how they will distribute the work he was assigned but wasn't doing, and ended the email with "thank goodness" in all caps, which I interpreted as them being happy he's gone. My other white male coworker, just an observation, whenever my non-black, non-white coworker makes a general joke, the white male makes it racial. The non-white, non-black female worker is from Puerto Rico, but the non-white male will be sneaky and joke about people from Mexico or Costa Rica just to mask his racism, because I'm sure he knows how confused non-whites are about race. Racism. Well, I do think it's important. The observation here, she said she thinks that maybe this white fellow that got fired, maybe he did something really off code or whatever. Maybe he did something personal to one of these white people as far as him getting fired. I do think that's important, because that, I think, happens as well. Sometimes they, whites have their own little grievances in the workplace, and that can play out in who gets fired or who gets terminated, or, you know, lots of bizarre things happen, you know, in the world. We're not dealing with a just system. So once you start from that premise, a lot of wacky things can happen. Anyway, but like I said last week, you know, white people are not ignorant, and this is like not a new thing, having whites on a job. And I said like whites, plural. And Mr. Fuller, you can call him. He can give you a nice lecture on this one in terms of whites being on a job and being allowed to hang out there for a long time, years and years and years. And all they have done is evolve how they waste time. Like, it started out, they would waste time smoking cigarettes and at the water cooler. Now they waste time on the cell phone and the internet. Like, It has just evolved. They have different ways of wasting time and making it look as though they are performing some sort of task in the workplace. This is not new, and white people are not ignorant about this at all. Mr. Fuller talked about that part too, like knowing about how many white people we can afford to have on the payroll who are going to do absolutely nothing. This is about how many of them we can afford to have, and then how many folks that we need to have that are actually going to do some work, at least some of the time that they are here. But yeah, that's been my experience as well. I've worked, because we're coming up on the holiday season, that, man, you talk about loafing. I have been in work environments where, starting about right now, you'll start having white people, they will be out for whole weeks at a time. Been there sometime where it's not announced. I've been there where, I mean, whole departments where it'll be 30, 35 people in the department. And you might have five people there. Everybody is walking like, what is going on? Is it a ghost town? Is it a plague? What's going on? Walking Dead breakout, like, what is going on? Professional, but then you can't tell me that everybody is just, you know, like nobody was aware that 25 people were taking off for the next week. Like you were clueless about it. You came in today and were stunned to see this many empty decks. Get out of here. They are well informed about their plantation and these operations. Super informed. Let's see. 605-313-5164. The code 564-943. Pound. Press *61 if you have thoughts, questions, observations you would like to share. Again, I will suggest make sure you are looking for ways to bolster your resume. Certainly that would mandate that you keep your resume current if you're constantly doing cool and groovy things that are enhancing your ability to be employed and to stand out when it's time for, you know, hiring. Updating the resume and looking for enhancements, training programs, certifications. We had a listener who wrote in about that today. Looking for those opportunities, asking those opportunities, doing some research, finding other individuals in your field who are a source of resources. That's why I've tried to say consistently, talking to other people that you work with so that you can ask them questions. I wouldn't be about the smiling, and I guess that might be one thing. I am not as much about smiling, but I am about building rapport where you can to get constructive information. I don't think you have to do a whole lot of, you know, he and telling tacky jokes and things of that nature. We can just be talking about the company here. If I'm new, there's got to be constructive information that I'm missing out on, and just talking about that. So I think sometimes that can mitigate. That way, it's not just talking about nonsense. It's not me talking about my personal life. It's not laughing and joking. Asking questions so that I can be more informed about my options here, potential here, things I don't know, the constructive things that are going to help me out in my employment here and beyond. Like, I think if you can do a tad more of that, sometimes that can offset, you know, he's not super jokey, but, you know, we do sit around and talk about constructive things. He asks lots of questions, seems to listen intently, like, you know, right on. Let's see. See, folks are still, I guess, spectating or getting their thoughts together. I hope this means if that many people are not being directly terrorized in your workplace, at least this week, things are not going too bad. Number one, you can certainly invest in the cows. That means you're getting all your raises and promotions uninhibited. racism-notes.blogspot.com. racism-notes.blogspot.com. PayPal button is in the top right corner. We are also on Cash App, cash.app/$thecows. If you are not being molested in your workplace, then hopefully you'll have a nickel or three to invest in the cows or another counter-racist project that you think is doing constructive work towards solving the problem. I would again say
if you aren't being mistreated, be mindful of other things that are happening in your workplace, and you should still be on the grind getting information, asking questions, things. I would still have the expectation that if things went well this week, that probably won't be the case for Monday. Let's see. Person that dialed in 8237. 8237, if you have commentary, you should be with us.
Greetings, Gus.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you for having this this broadcast every Friday. It has been quite the revolution in my everyday work life, and I have taken all of your suggestions to heart and have followed up on a lot of the suggestions that you have presented, as well as the callers. And I just wanted to commend you on your diligence in having the broadcast each and every Friday. I'm sorry I missed the first part. I think you started at 5 p.m. PST, right, Pacific time?
Yes, ma'am.
Am I correct? I was busy battling traffic through Seattle, so I'm sorry I missed the first part, and I will be able to look that up or listen to that once I once it's posted by I think the gentleman who posts your broadcasts on YouTube, his the Fox or Mr. Fox or something similar to that.
Mr. Fox.
Yes, Mr. Fox. So about what Black African was saying about being smiley on the job, I think that what I have done, because it is in our nature to be smiling type of humans, and we do, and that can be misconstrued by racists out there as being just the Negro that needs to smile. But I think that is just something that we do. Maybe it's a reaction to the abuse that we are exposed to every day on at work. I don't know, but I have, I used to be quite the smiley type of person that was just to accommodate folks at work to accept me. And now that I have become much more serious about my my work, and I have taken down most of the things that I used to have inside of my office, say pictures and trinkets and candy. I've taken that out of my my office so that I do not get these drive-by visits from folks who are just coming to check me out and check what I'm doing. And so that has helped me to stop the accommodation of racists at work by needing to smile more. And so that has been effective on my part in my everyday work situations. And also I've had quite the interesting relationship with my manager. He has been or has been giving me quite a difficult time working for him as his support person, and that is because I think he was feeling slighted that I was assigned to him because I am of African descent. I am crystal black, and that in a white organization is very, very difficult for most people to accept that I'm in a more executive position, even in support. And so he was feeling slightly perturbed that I was I became his assistant, so to speak, his executive assistant. So he gave me quite a bit of a runaround in the beginning. And I also didn't get adequate training when I started at this organization. And so we had our battles to fight to get me onboarded and to have me work for him in the most efficient ways and figuring out how he likes his work done. So, because of listening to your broadcast, it has definitely taken out the confusion out of my everyday work. I would have probably gone out of my mind by now had it not been for you and the callers giving suggestions and remedying these situations at work. So that's what I wanted to say, and I really wanted to give you all my gratitude from the bottom of my heart and commend you for everything that you do. Thank you.
Wow. Well, Seattle traffic is absolutely terrible. That is rough. I'm so sorry that you get Friday night. Oh, Friday Seattle traffic is the worst. Jesus. Woo. I'm so sorry you had to motor through that, but hopefully you are safe and sound at your residence or someplace cool and warm and dry.
Mm-hmm.
I hope, I always say I hope the program is worthy of folks' time and energy and hopefully provides constructive, logical suggestions that can help solve problems without creating new problems. So if that is happening, grand, that is what we set out to do. I think, and you just, I was going to say confirmed, but just corroborated. It's the same pattern that we heard early. You said you missed the portion because you were battling the traffic out here of white people not being happy, supportive, jubilant about black people's workplace success. You getting this job, executive assistant, perturbed. That was what you said. He's perturbed. Didn't even get one of these, you know, high yellow ones. We got a crystal black Negro to come in and get the job. I'm disgusted about all of it. And we, again, Mr. Fuller said he used to think the exact opposite. He would think, oh man, you know, once we come in and show my credentials and hardware, I'm ready to go. And, you know, I'm excited to be your executive. Is this going to be great? That they're like, oh wow, look at how ambitious she's ready to roll and motivated, got her credentials like that. I underestimated these Negroes. Maybe I need to give them. That's not what this is at all. They are dedicated. I brought that. This came up yesterday. Elliott Bay, I don't know if you're at the bookstore, but this came up at the talk yesterday that I botched the audio. I hope that they have the recording and we should have her on the program, Azure Savage. But yeah, this is not accident. This is not ignorance. This is white dedication to white supremacy. Of course, I'm not going to be excited about you being the executive assistant. Why aren't you cleaning the toilets or, you know, even that? Like, I don't know if I even want you to do that, much less be the executive assistant. Like, oh, my God, fine. I guess we'll halfway train you. And isn't that another pattern? Haven't we talked about that since the inception of workplace racism? And that's just another part of the dedication. We will make sure that you don't succeed because we're not going to train you well. We're going to make sure, and she used the word efficiency. We're going to make sure that you're not going to be an efficient, productive employee because you've not been trained. We're not even going to give you a chance to do that. And then we can come in, whammo, see, I was right to be disgusted about you being hot. Look at this crappy, incompetent work. Look at this. It's disgraceful. We intended for you to do disgraceful work. So then we can gloat about it and fire you and hire, you know, whoever we wanted for the job. I try to point that out consistently and request. That's why I just said you will probably have to request opportunities for those enhancements, certifications, new trainings, might even be better training, because this seems really inadequate. Like, I asked questions that didn't get answered, and it just doesn't seem like I've been properly prepared to succeed. I'd probably phrase it just that way. It just doesn't seem that I've been properly prepared to succeed. Is there any way I could get any additional training to make sure that I can do the best job possible here? Question lane. That's the way that I would ask it too, because that happens so frequently. That's another one I'd be prepared for. They're not going to train me correctly. What can I do to supplement? Asking for additional training and other ways that I can learn so that I can compensate, offset for them sabotaging, deliberately not training me correctly.
That's wonderful. And just on the training part, I found out that through LinkedIn, there's quite a few courses that are free and that can be accessed through that website to enhance your technological skills, your just the programs that are used every day at work. And those are wonderful. That's a wonderful website to just be able to find out more training if you're not getting adequate training at work.
Lovely information. Thank you for sharing that. And that's probably most Black people. We hear that it's so common. Doesn't matter what field you're in, you're probably not getting adequate training at work. Request more. And don't be afraid to ask. I know that's been me sometimes, where you get afraid. The system of white supremacy often discourages Black people from asking questions. Ask for training. Ask for things that are constructive. If we were in a system of justice, I don't think there would ever be any hesitation about asking for something that is constructive. You're not asking for crack cocaine. You're not asking for a gun to go out and do a school shooting. I need something that is constructive. It might just be training, information that will help me do my job better. What could possibly be incorrect about me making such a request? If we were in a system of justice, nothing. Right on. Let's get it. What did you need? Let's get to it. Boom, boom, boom. We get that knocked out and be moved on to something that's only in a system of white supremacy, where Black people, non-white people in general, are regularly discouraged from asking for things that are constructive, asking for help.
Just lastly, and then I'll mute my line. I am really, really looking forward to listening to your rendition on going to visit the Elliott Bay bookstore and listening to Azure Savage's book reading. Was it a book reading? My son himself was very affected by, he is, of course, Black, and he was affected by the Seattle school system, more so the Lake Washington School District, which is an even more whiter suburb than the Seattle School District. So I am, he's now 28, and back when I was a very confused non-white individual, I did not know that we were in a war of white, of white supremacy, racism. And I agreed to some of the programs that they stuck my son into, and it has definitely affected his life up to today. And that was back when he was in first grade kindergarten, when his teacher diagnosed him with ADHD, and I didn't think to go to further the findings by going to a psychologist and so on and so forth. He was diagnosed with ADHD and then was stuck in special ed and so forth. So I cannot wait. I'm very much looking forward to your broadcast regarding that. Thank you. And I'll mute my line.
Much obliged. Thank you for sharing. She talked about, you know, exactly what you just shared about how the treatment, mistreatment of Black students in particular, and non-white students on the whole in the Seattle public school system, and which classes they get placed into, which classes they are prohibited from participating in, and the long-term ramifications of that. And I guess she did research for her book. She went and did interviews with Black students about their treatment and, you know, how they felt about their education in the Seattle public school system. I did botch the audio. I'm a victim of white supremacy, so I was not able to record, even though I thought I did. However, I did speak with Ms. Savage, as I said, and she said she'd be willing to come and chat it up with us on the program, which she had already heard about. So she should be coming to hang out on the program as soon as we can get a date and time together. And I'm going to speak with her, because I did ask. I realized, you know, as soon as it was over, like, what? The audio failed. What's going on? Is this, you know, event recorded? Will it be posted? And apparently they said it was recorded. So I'm going to see if the audio is available, because I'll go into more detail tomorrow. I was able to ask a question. That's all I need to say. I was able to ask a question. That's why I hope that there is audio. Even though I didn't get to ask the question directly myself, I was able to write it down, and my question was read verbatim got to get the audio. The audio response to the reading of my question alone. Got to get the audio. Epic failure on my part. But Miss Savage should be on the program regardless. And I'm sure she will remember the question and the exchange. Yes, much obliged. Caller here in, right here in Seattle. That is amazing. I'm always stunned when people here in Seattle call. This does not, even after all these years, this does not feel like my hometown or what have you, as they would say. But always nice to hear from folks who are right here. If you want to do yoga, let me know. Can let you know if you want to come practice. Other folks who dialed in, we still are soliciting suggestions for the Black African. If any folks have thoughts on him being told to smile, how you would respond to them, particularly in a newer work environment. I do think that's important for context. In a newer work environment, if you're being told, hey, you should smile, boy, smile more. Smile more. What's wrong with you? Being all serious around here. If any suggestions on how you would respond to that, folks that we've missed totally, line should be open.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, this is Draftomania. I'd like to say hi to the listeners and the callers. And I just basically wanted to share about my workplace racism. I've been having an incident with some, I guess you can call it like stalking. There was this security guard that initially I met him at the bus depot. And, he acted as if he was interested in me. We exchanged numbers or what have you. And then it was like, it was something that just was off about him. Went any further than that. But then I was, okay, so I was seeing him. He was basically, apparently he had, saw me in the bus depot, acted as if, pretended to be interested in me or what have you. We exchanged numbers. We had conversed a couple of times on the telephone. And then I just, like I said, I just listened to my gut and I just was like, I didn't engage any longer with this gentleman. Then I was seeing him again because he works for a security firm. So then I was seeing him again when I was going through an issue that I talked about with the roommate issue with me going down to the courthouse. I had to go down to take care of that issue with an incident I was having to deal with at the courthouse. So I had to keep going back and forth to the courthouse and be out maybe 7 months or so. So he was the security guard at the courthouse also. So, obviously him, I really wouldn't say too much to him, what have you, because it was just, just his whole demeanor and it just didn't seem right the way he approached me because he acted like he had been watching me. He told me he had been watching me. He saw me a couple of times and all this, he made up this big, story or what have you. So that was another time I was seeing him. So then when I started working at the current place that I'm working at, I started one of my coworkers, one of the individuals that I was having issues with, brought him into the break room and basically said some made a comment as far as, I needed protection. So I brought a security guard up here in case you try to do something to me. So I didn't say anything. I didn't feed into this what he said. But I knew when I saw the guy, I knew exactly who he was. And of course, you would think that somebody that tried to, that you had conversed with, you exchanged numbers with, they know who you are. But what he did was he acted as if he didn't know who I was. So he made a statement like, oh, don't I know you from somewhere? And I said, I don't know exactly what I said to respond to him. But, you know, he just tried to act like he didn't know who I was. So basically, what he's been doing is he's been coming there, and this has been for, oh, man, this has been for a minute, maybe 6, 7, 8 months now, that he's been coming up to the job. We had security, but he's we have had security. But I just found out something the other day. So what he had been doing is been coming up there to the job, up to my floor specifically. It seems like he's been coming exactly when I'm getting ready to go on my break or what have you. And he'll just come on the floor. And it's like, you know, he's, you know, coming, I guess, to watch me or whatever, right? So what I did, I think it was Wednesday night, because it's like a thing where it's like, you know, it's starting to become, well, not starting to become, but it has become, because it was at one time I was kind of feeling kind of anxious, because it was like I felt very uncomfortable, you know, when you know that something is not correct, and you know that there's something more to what this individual is doing, because why is it that you're acting like you don't know me? So I don't have any interaction with this man at all. I don't say anything. I'm not friend, like I don't even talk to this man at all. So I basically just, you know, when I see him, I just keep going, and I don't say anything. I just avoid any kind of contact with this person, based on the fact that he was basically trying to lie. And just, you know, like it's like he's playing games. And like I said, I'm starting to see that it's more than what he's trying to make it out to be. He has some type of ulterior motive for being where he is. So I saw him the other day. He came up there, because when I would see him a couple of other times, I noticed that I was feeling anxious at one time, and I had to, this was some months ago, I had to end up doing some breathing, and I mean, like, I had to use lavender oil to kind of calm myself down, because I was starting to feel like very uncomfortable and nervous, and I guess that my fight or flight was kicking in. I don't know, it was just very uncomfortable. So the other night he came on the floor, because like I said, a lot of times when I see him, I just totally ignore him. I don't pay him any mind at all. So he came on the floor, and he was making comments to this, you know, the different students or what have you. And he looked at me with this really funny, you know, like, look. And I looked like, what I did, I just looked at him, and I just kept going, you know, like, I don't, you know, don't stop, minimize contact to minimize conflict. But it was just the manner in which he, it's like, you know, basically what it is, it's like, you're coming around to intimidate me, to make me feel uncomfortable, you know what I mean? And that's the way that I'm feeling. Like, this, his presence is like, it's like you're coming around just to intimidate me, antagonize me. And, if, you know, it's, I feel like I'm being harassed, but it's covertly, you know what I mean? It's just like, you know, you're just coming there, like, you know, where I, it's like, okay, you went from the bus depot to the courthouse. Now you're coming on my job. You know what I mean? And you may know people there, but you know, I found what I did. I inquired the day after and the following day. And I asked one of the coworkers, one of the people that are involved with, you know, the events that happened in the building. So I asked the question. I said, well, you know, do you know what this guy, because I don't even remember his name. I said, do you know what this, this, you know, this security guard's name is, this tall guy? Do you know what his name is? He said, no, because we don't really have any. He said, no, I know of one guy. I said, well, let me ask you a question. I said, do we have security that works work here? you know, do we have security that work? He said, no, we don't, because we did have one security guard that worked, but he's no longer working there because he had an incident with somebody there in a building. So I asked him, he said, well, no, there is no security on guard. Only time we have security there is when we have an event. So I said, oh, interesting, you know, because I'm just standing in the question lane. I'm making note of this on my phone. You know, I'm emailing myself, just making sure I take notes of every single thing that happens. So what I found out is that he doesn't, when he's been coming up there, it's not like he's even coming because he's, you know, he's a scheduled worker. So it's like, okay, so now you're just coming up there to just come up there to see, you know, to try to impose your, you know, because it's like he has this kind of like intimidating presence. And like, you know, and then you're like kind of doing this and like antagonizing also. So what I did is just that I took note of it. And I'm just going to keep it on record, keep note of it. And if anything, if I need to do anything further, because what I would like to do is find out his name. So in case anything else comes of it, because like I said, if there's nobody there, if you're not, if there's no event on our floor or anything going on, then why are you coming up there to just, you know, make faces or just, you know, stare me down or try to make me feel like I'm kind of make me feel intimidated. So, you know, like I said, I'm basically just taking notes. It's another victim. You know, I'm just taking notes. Never be, you know, and not to basically react to the situation. Staying calm, collected, you know, trying not to feel like, you know, intimidated by this individual. But I'm still going to be aware of my surroundings and what's going on around me, because I find it to be kind of strange that this person just, you know, is just popping up every single time, you know. So that's basically what I wanted to share. And like I said, I'm going to just stay vigilant and continue to take notes. And, you know, and if I have to take it any further, hopefully I will not have to. But if I have to, I will. I will, at least I will have a record of it. And that's all I have to share.
Much obliged, Draftomania. Wowzers. I guess before I get to the main point of the argument, when you were speaking with the staff there and you said, you know, hey, do we have security that works here? And he said, no, we used to have security, but he doesn't work anymore. He had an incident. I said, pause? Incident? What do you mean? Incident with who? Incident about what? What transpired? When was this? Was it in the papers? Like, I think Thomas in New York, we spoke before about any additional information that you can get about the organization, I would want. And especially if there was a so-called incident. Oh, yeah, let's hear about this. Did it involve a weapon, a firearm, accusations of sexual misconduct? Like, what's going on here? So that would be one. And then, once I, you know, found out about this fella coming through and who is this guy, what's he here? If he doesn't work here and you're just coming into the building like to harass me, like, oh, man, I don't even know if I would give this person the courtesy of letting them know, like, I am not interested in visiting or talking to you at all. And like letting personnel in the building know, like, this is just going to be trespassing and calling the enforcement officials because I am not interested in chatting, hanging out, kicking it, nothing. Like, do not talk to me. You know, we can just go our separate ways, wish you the best, but, you know, and just leave it, leave it be. I was thinking Gavin DeBecker the whole time. But I mean, that's, in my view, that is extremely dangerous. Someone coming to your place of work and just feeling like they can be there, even if they weren't coming inside, even if, you know, they were just driving by at the time when I was getting off or going to work, like, that is like, whoa, I would write down all identifying information. I would alert building personnel. Like, that is just like way, way, way incorrect, suspicious behavior. And yeah, I would take that very seriously and try and get that nipped in the bud immediately. His presence is totally, totally unwelcome, totally unacceptable, and letting other people in the building know so that they can be on alert when he's there. Because you never know, he could come one time and be upset, you know, about something or you know, whatever the case is. You said you felt like this is kind of a show of force. He's a taller, larger person, so he can be kind of menacing just with his presence alone. So you never know if he gets frustrated or what have you. Like I said, I definitely think in Gavin DeBecker, he did talk about, you know, sometimes it can be good to not escalate. But I, someone coming on your work premises, that is a pretty big one. And doing it repeatedly, coming inside, like, yeah, I would want that stopped immediately and would let, you know, as many people know as possible, like, this has been happening. This is not welcome. And in fact, I don't safe. That's the word of the use that one all the time. Workplace context. He makes me feel unsafe. He knows he is not welcome. And yet he continues to come here to stalk me. I'd use that type of language to stalk, molest, and let them know so that they can be on alert and boop, get that dealt with promptly if he returns. Get more water. Do any of the other folks that are here have suggestions for Drafter Mania before we move forward? If other folks have their own situations, any suggestions on how you would deal with this kind of stalker in the workplace environment? We'll pay attention as we move forward if folks do have any suggestions for Drafter Mania. Other folks who dialed in, if you have thoughts, observations for workplace racism, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, Bay Area mom. Yes, we can hear you.
Oh, thank you. Greetings. I have maybe a suggestion or a comment on the person that doesn't smile. The melanated person that doesn't smile. I would just say, if they're not asking me a question, they're just making statements saying you should smile more, I would just hear it. But if they ask me why I didn't smile, I would just let them know that the job doesn't call for me to smile all day. It's uncomfortable to have my face in that position all day. If it requires me to smile, I'll smile. And I would just leave it alone, because it's not a job requirement to smile unless it's, you know, I'm at In-N-Out Burger, maybe I have to smile. But other than that, if it doesn't require smiling, that's why you're not smiling and you don't have to respond to a statement, only a question. And so that's my thought on that. Then with the lady that just told her story about the stalker, I'll have to think about that a bit more, because I've never experienced anything like that. So I'll think about that a bit more and then listen to the other suggestions that may be given as well. And if I have a chance, I'll throw my change in there. But I wanted to do workplace racism on myself today. I got a chance to catch the program. I get off at 6. I started back working again. I just thought about it. I haven't worked in 9 months since Amazon, with trauma and terror with the machine work at Amazon. Oh, my. So now I'm a behavior therapist. So there was a caller that called in either last week or the week prior and shared her story about the job and how they don't release as much information, as, especially how dangerous it is working with the children with autism. That's what I do. So my issue is, or what I wanted to share is, so I'm in West Oakland. I have a guy in West Oakland, young male, and they're supposed to have supervisors come in on your first session with these children. I started in September. I'm supposed to have a supervisor. These people moved from one city called Richmond to West Oakland, California. So the supervisor's white over the case. So he sends the email. I'm only supposed to pair when I first meet them, so I just get to know the children. I'm not running any instructions or giving them drills to do or goals to run. I'm just pairing with them. So he's nowhere to be found, and when he does show up, I wasn't timely. I may have been 2 minutes behind because I'm circling around looking for parking space. They say it's a gated community, but it's not a gated community, not the way they're wording it. So he comes in. The little boy's looking for me, of course. He doesn't want to be bothered with anyone else. He's looking for me. So he's, where is she at? Where is she at? So now he's watching, looking at his clock because the little boy isn't paying him any attention. He's waiting on me. So I get in there. Oh, there she is. We were waiting so long. I thought you weren't waiting long. 5 minutes after. You're not waiting long. Stop. So, and I don't smile either. You know, not unnecessarily. Smile with the children, but just not unnecessarily. So, he's feeling however he's feeling. So, I have a rapport with the child because I've developed one. He hasn't been around. So, he's asking me these questions about what I've done. I haven't done anything. Because you haven't been here. So I don't know what you want me to do. I see all this stuff in this computer. I don't know what you want me to do because you're supposed to be here. So yeah. No, I understand. Yeah. So we're going outside, so we're leaving. We're walking outside. First time I meet him, so he's trying to ask, get a feel for me. Asking me questions about how I got into this field. And let him know I've taken child development for a while, and I'm trying to, you know, switch over as far as what I want to do career-wise. So then he's, okay, well, you know, what time did you get there? Like 9:10? I was like, no, 9:10. What? Oh, no, just next time call scheduling because, you know, the kiddos, they're waiting. They could be waiting. Where's she at? Where's she at? So I was like, okay. So when I look over to my left, I hadn't done it yet, but there's like 30 guys on this car, right? So they're all black like me. So they're on his car, and they must have been on his car before, but he didn't say anything. So now they're on the car. Who's that white guy, man? Man, I thought that was your probation officer, man. So now he's nervous because it's like a slew of guys. And they're doing whatever they do on, you know, in the morning and what's up. So now he's nervous. So he goes over to his car. He's like, oh, man, what's this? Give me a car, man. I thought you were probation officer, man. So now he's nervous. So he gets in the car and he speeds off. So there's an email service saying, due to the unsafe conditions, we're requesting to park inside of the gate instead of on the street. So, because he spoke, we called the mom and said that it's not safe to be parked out there, and we need gate access. Mind you, you have to have stickers because they're housing authority units, and you can't just park your car unless you have a registered car with a sticker. So I don't park in there, and I'm not afraid. So I get this email. Oh, great news, guys. We can park in the gate. The grandma, call the grandma. We're not even supposed to call these people. So now we can call grandma. And grandma will come and open the gate so we can go in. So he's not frightened when he does show up. So apparently that didn't go over well because you in real life you have to have a housing authority sticker in your window showing that you're allowed to park in this unit, not because you're scared. So I see him again, and now he's, okay, so we're supposed to do arts and crafts. What arts and crafts? I don't even see you. I haven't seen you since the last time when you sent the email because you're scared the guys are on your car. Oh, no. So I was parking for you. Parking was great for me. I don't have a problem parking. So you're not parking in the gate. I don't have permission to park in the gate. You saying I can park in the gate isn't permission. I will get a ticket, and I don't want a housing authority ticket because you're afraid to park on the street. Oh, we're working on that right now. We're working with housing authority so we can get stickers. I'm like, well, yeah, you give me a sticker, I'll park in here. Other than that, I'm cool on the street. So he, we're supposed to do arts and crafts. What arts and crafts? You don't say anything. I don't see you. That's okay. We can do it now. Okay, let's do it now. Where are these arts and crafts at? I've never seen these things. So we're doing whatever it is that we're doing. But I think, I'm saying all this to say, I don't think they expect black people, because it seems like a white-dominated field. And I don't think they think we're supposed to generate a rapport with these different children, depending on their how high they are on the spectrum so rapidly. And I've done that. I have 5 different cases, and they all enjoy my presence. And I don't think they expected that, because they're not really enjoying the other behavioral therapist presence either. And I noticed that with my supervisors. I get a lot of, oh, really? Yeah. And they're all non-black, non-white, mostly female. But this particular male, he's really riding on me for whatever reason, because of how I do my job and how I've been able to catch on and do it without their help, because they don't give a lot of help. They try to because they're going through other people and the insurance, but they don't give as much help as they could. And that's all. Thanks for taking my call. I'll mute my line.
Not giving as much help as they could. That, again, just picking out patterns, system of racism, white supremacy, non-white people going to a new job, and same old thing. I'm not even saying you got to roll out the carpet and find out all of my favorite snacks and beverages and get me a new pair of footies. I'm not even saying that. I'm just saying, man, can I get policy and procedure and maybe get adequate training so that I can do the job that you hired me to do in an efficient manner? Is that all? No? That's okay. Got it. Much obliged, Bay Area mom. I do remember you telling us some of the terrorism about the situation in Amazon. So now doing your behavioral therapist work. The complaints from the very beginning that you were late in coming, or thought you were never going to get here, and that sort of thing. Just the exaggerate. Same thing I said before. We had the earlier caller who was talking about weeping white man, who said they impugned his credentials and what have you. Nobody does it better in terms of white victimization. Oh my gosh, you're late and you're never going to get here. Oh, you know, that sort of thing. And just stay calm. I think you said you also have a demeanor where you don't do a lot of smiling. You have a rapport with the children. But other than that, I'm about my business. That's what I'm here to do. And just being focused and asking questions. That's what I would recommend from everyone. Ask questions. Be focused. Try not to let them. They'll try to do a lot of things to try to get us to respond emotionally. Say that all the time. Just being able to maintain our composure so that we can think logically about how best to respond. Asking, always a big advocate, asking questions. Asking questions can be our best tactic in the workplace. Sometimes we don't have too many options while we are there. Are you having to go to people's residence for your job?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Do you have any specific codes to make sure you stay safe while you're doing this work?
No, not in the neighborhoods. And now it gets dark early, so all of my, I'm full-time, so everyone is sick, so that's why I can't call in until 6. I'm scared of the white neighborhoods more than the black ones. And as far as with the children, they tend to hit themselves versus me. And I haven't had one and think it's okay to hit me. But they tend to, you know, when they get frustrated, they hit themselves. And that's only when other behavior therapists are there with me trying to make them do whatever it is they're trying to do, they want them to do. Other than that, I don't have violence. I do have a stun gun, but I don't know how appropriate it would be in someone's home with the children because they're all over the place. So I'll figure that out as far as personal safety.
I would definitely, I can totally understand working with children, you know, feeling some type of way about a stun gun. But yeah, if I'm in, and mm-hmm. with it being dark, like that's a whole nother consideration. It gets dark super early now and it's going to get worse as it, or it's going to get dark sooner as it gets closer to the end of the year. So that's definitely something if you're going into neighborhoods that you don't know, even if you do know, and it's late at night and you're parked, like safety precautions. Say that all the time in a workplace context. Like, we have to be primary in terms of looking out for our well-being and safety, and just being in people's houses, because you never know if they're gun owners or they got a hunting knife stored in every drawer, or I mean, you just never know. That's always kind of a, can be a risky proposition, being in somebody else's house. So definitely do everything that you can to keep yourself safe. Have a code in mind already. And that's one where I would definitely not minimize any signals. If anything seems awry, or it seems like, uh-oh, that, you know, like, take all of that seriously while I'm in somebody else's residence to make sure that my safety and well-being is not being minimized at all. Context of white supremacy. Much obliged to our Bay Area mom. If we have other folks that we missed totally. In fact, I'm going to make sure I get through our last email for the time being, and then we'll nab our other folks who dialed in that we've missed so far. This is from Kizzy's cousin. She writes, a very toxic week on the plantation, toxic in all caps. Last week, I wrote about a furtive, suspected racist male attempting some unjust networking. He tried to undermine a non-white male who was attending a meeting with a senior manager at the company where I work. I said he failed. You asked how come? That's right. Two reasons. A, because the senior manager is non-white, black, and less confused. B, the race soldier did not get invited to the meeting. That said, let me be clear. The suspected racist failed in that instance. I am confident he will carry out more unjust networking attempts via my race soldier manager to discuss the matter, if he has not already done so. Racists and suspected racists do not give up. Summary of racist antics for the week. Number one. The racist suspects Voltroned this week. Verb. I was in a meeting where my racist manager took credit for my work. She has also infected other racist suspects who are acting openly hostile to me. I was at a meeting with several people, including my manager and a racist suspect male who used to be a team administrator when I joined the company. He is now more senior than I am. During the meeting, it came out that my manager had referred to him, a non-white female who is working with me on a project. The non-white female had given him the wrong information, which I corrected. He approached me at the end of the meeting to request an introduction to some of my contacts that can help with the matter. I said I would do so. What caused me to give a mental was how he started the conversation. He said, I might have known you would have the information. On the surface, people may take such a remark as a compliment, but his face and tone suggested otherwise. This is someone who I've been cordial with in the past, and there's no reason, to my knowledge, for his hostility. He took notes from the meeting and circulated them to everyone who attended. There were about 8 people there. He somehow managed to correctly attribute everyone else's contributions in the meeting
to them in the notes, but yet managed to erase my existence. He also attributed my comments to my race soldier manager. Anyone who's ever taken notes at a meeting should understand how remarkable this is, particularly from someone whose previous job regularly involved note-taking. I pondered on my response for a couple of hours. See there? I'm just pausing right there. You don't have to respond immediately. You can know. Now, I think this little, you know, no-count, sneaky race soldier, I think he said something slick. I think he tried to do something. I'm going to wait, though. I'm going to go back, and I'm going to think of a really good question. Or I'm going to think of exactly how I want to respond. You can take 20 minutes. You can take 30 minutes. You can take 2 days and come back and address. Sometimes it's best. Think. Just stop and think. What is the best way that I can respond that's going to work out in my best interest? And let me think about that. Let me take some time and really think about that. Use some logic. Use a lot of logic. Continuing, I pondered on my response for a couple of hours, then sent an email to everyone concerned, correcting his error. Put that in quotes. I wanted an audit trail. I acknowledged that taking notes can be difficult in my email response. I saw him the following day, and he made a point of speaking to me and thanking me for my email. The words were nice, but underneath was pure nastiness. His racist antics continued. I had sent an email introducing him to my contact as he requested. To my surprise, he then sent an invitation for the three of us to meet. He then sent me an email outlining that he wanted to ensure my contact's company was involved in the project I lead. I responded by asking him why he sent the invitation and clarified that the company is already involved. He sent a meeting cancellation in 0.2 seconds. I've not heard from him anymore. Second report. I had to stand my ground 3 times this week. Wow, what a challenging November. Meetings were put in my calendar that clashed with other appointments. The perpetrators were 1 racist suspect and 2 non-white confused anti-black females, yikes, who are being directed by my racist suspect manager. I emailed them each time, letting them know that I would not be attending as I had existing appointments in my diary and copied in my manager. The meetings involved other people. Somehow, they managed to find a time that worked for everyone else. The majority were suspected racists, but not me. These were deliberate acts of terrorism to undermine me. I stood my ground. All 3 meetings were rescheduled to times that were convenient to all. Love it. Love it. Love it. Because I think this happens so consistently. This goes back to what I said about time theft, where your time will just be ignored. It'll just be assumed. Oh, this nigger will be here when we say so. Niggers, the meeting's at 3, nigger. Meetings at 4, nigger, be here. And it's now thought, well, wait a minute, this nigger might have some other duties, responsibilities. Oh, wait, I guess we should pay her the same courtesy we did everyone else to ask in a timely manner in advance what is a free moment on your calendar and schedule appropriately. I guess we should have done that with the nigger too. Dang. Number 3, finally, someone wrote in last week about racist acts using non-white people to undermine them in the workplace. One method I used to counteract this in the past was to strategically assign tasks on the project. I ensured the non-white female supporting me on a project would report directly to my manager on her work. I knew from her behavior and things she said that she did not want to report to me. Anti-blackness. I had assessed that non-white female was inexperienced, also a deliberate part of the racist strategy. They brought her in to cause conflict. When my manager tried to play us off against each other, I arranged a 3-way meeting to ensure everyone was on the same page. My manager was incompetent, so in the end, it was the blind leading the blind. It exposed what needed to be exposed and took some of the pressure off me. Now that the non-white female victim, she's confused. Anti-black, you're in a project lead position and you have her doing assignments and reporting directly to the white person. That,
I can see, hey, at least this way, it eliminates an opportunity. If I have any critiques of her assignments or any problems, it's not me. You're reporting to the white person who can let you know if anything is wrong, you miss something, we short circuit all of that. And if it's, well, if I do it this way, she's going to rat on me. She's probably going to do that anyway. Not going to be any secrets in the workplace. This way we can fast forward that. You can go ahead and snitch to her directly, and then we can all sit down and have a meeting, which is probably going to happen anyway. Fast forward all that. I do think that's a quality attempt, method, means of trying to neutralize anti-blackness, because it's probably going to be more of these types of scenarios where a non-white person can be a black person who is confused about racism, and white people have the ability to just introduce them into situations in ways to create conflict where we can squabble and fight with each other and totally lose sight of the fact that, hey, it's a white person who pays all of us. It's a white person who put this person here in the first place that now we're all squabbling with. Let's keep track of that. Much obliged, Kizzy's cousin. Give out the number again. It is 605-313-5164. The code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Folks that we have missed totally, if you have a hand up, suggestions or comments on what's been shared, line should be open. Proceed.
Yeah, be heard.
Greetings, caller in Florida.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. I have quite a bit of reports I like to make. First, I wanted to start out with, I know the Jim Jones and the Guyana situation was mentioned, I think, last week. And there was actually a metaphor that a black female used with that. And these first two refers to the Popeye's chicken sandwich craze. And she was, it was me and two other black females in there, and she mentioned that, hey, you know, it's really, it's nobody but us going to get these sandwiches. But I'm like, I'm thinking in my mind, it's all kind of people I've seen get the sandwiches. But anyways, and she went on to compare it, like, don't drink the Kool-Aid, and you know what happened with Jim Jones. So I was like, that's an interesting metaphor. Then I had this walk down in the department. And the second one was far more egregious and racist. I had sent an email earlier this week, and I noticed the top white person, the boss, came into the department where it's a mostly black staff employed. And he comes in, he speaks to everyone, and all of a sudden, he turns to the same black female and once again mentions the Popeye's chicken sandwich. He says, you know how we were talking about the chicken sandwich earlier? Now, this was very slick because he wanted to make it seem like I didn't bring it up. We were already talking about it, like y'all brought it up. I'm like, this is the topic you bring up when I just sent that email early on this week, and I know he found out about it. And he said, yeah, you know, I did try it. And then he said, you know, the pickles are really thick and this and that. And to make it worse, he brought up another black person from another part of the work site, like that works in another building. But he brought up the other black person he was talking to about that with. So I guess that's, you just talk to the black staff about, you know, chicken sandwiches, I guess. So I didn't even look at him. Like, I just focused on the monitor and continued to do the work I've been assigned or whatever. So my third one is, I was walking through the traffic department, right? And language was used in a crafty, wicked manner. Racist, of course, because this is a white woman who just moved into a new house or whatever. And I guess she was having problems with insects. So I guess it's a certain species of roach called the Asian roach, Asian. And she said, I just got to find something to take care of these roaches. I guess there's some Asian roaches. And she's like, I got to get rid of these damn Asians. So she walked away from her desk, but it sounded like she was talking about people, because I've known her in the past to talk about people who classify as Asians and these stereotypes about how they are inefficient with driving and they're not skillful drivers and racist stereotypes. So that was another one. My fourth one is there was a metaphor also used where another white woman from the clique did not. These are two clique members, that last one, and this is another clique member. She comes in and says to the black female, says, oh, you know, I can't really talk right now, because the black female was trying to ask her something. Oh, I can't really talk right now. You know, we had to go to the dean's office again. So, you know, I can't really say nothing right now. Oh, come back and tell me what happened. No, I can't talk right now. We had to go to the dean's office, a school metaphor, right? So, you know, I wonder what she meant by that. So, my fifth one is, these two are, I guess I categorize anti-blackness. There's a black female that I do speak to on occasion. She can be very courteous. But see, this is like what it means to be a black person, in my opinion, because I was eating a salad, right? And I had my water container, 64 ounces of water, right? So, you know, she wants to look at something on television in the break room. And I say, oh, you know, you can go ahead and change the channel. You know, I'm just looking at my phone or whatever, eating my salad. So she said, okay, you already know what I'm turning to. So I started laughing or whatever. And she gets to the table with her food and turns and notices that I'm eating a salad, right? Okay. And she says, oh, wow, I noticed that. Wait a minute, are you trying to eat healthy? I said, yeah, you know, I'm trying to do a more better, healthier balance of my diet, you know, something like that. I said, and say, well, you're not trying to lose weight, are you? I said, yeah, pretty much. You know, I need to. So it would be better for me. And she says, oh, well, you don't want to lose too much weight, or you'll look like you smoke crack. Okay, so I didn't really give a response to that. I just kind of just smirked because, you know, it's a black person, right? So I try to definitely use some patience with black people. But, you know, I rarely encounter this black female. But that was interesting that you try to eat healthy and drink water, somehow drug abuse comes into the conversation. But this is how we've been systematically trained to see each other. But of a white person that said that, I definitely would have, I would have gave, you know, a response to that one. And my last one is, I had to make a response to this one, because I think this guy practices that show offism where, we tend to, well, some black males tend to have that means to make a sexual impression on other females, or black females, to at the same time mistreat another black male. And this person has been doing this for a long time. So he's in there talking to the other two black females and addressing them in a pleasant manner, but looks over looks over at me because, you know, I'm just doing the work or whatever. And first he says, "What's up, boy?" Now, this is a person almost 60 years old now. Okay, so I didn't say nothing. Then he says, "What's up, brother?" I say, I kind of wait for like 4 seconds. And then in front of everybody, I just say, "Don't call me brother." And then he's like, he in shock. So he says, "Oh, we're like," he said, "why not?" or something like that. And I said, "You know, just don't call me brother. Call me by my name." And then he says, "Well, can I call you sir?" And I said, "Well, that's courteous." And he says, "Oh, but I can't call you brother." And then I say, "But we're not brothers." "Oh, but we are in Christ, aren't we?" "Well, that's incorrect." That's what I said. So then he didn't let me alone. And he turned to the black female and says, "Oh, well, hey, such and such," he says her name, "can I call you my sister?" And it was inaudible. I could not hear what she said. I don't know if she was in agreement or whatever. I don't know. But she, like, he tried to kind of get off the subject and start asking about Christmas decorations or something like that. So I don't know if he thought I was talking about his religion or whatever, but definitely there's been a lot of toxic anti-black comments, like that one I shared where he said to a white female that sat in front of me, he says, "Oh, watch out for blank behind you. You know, if he do anything, just let me know. I'll be able to handle him." Basically, try to put forth the notion that he's going to commit violence or some kind of physical act against me. So, you know, I had to pretty much let him know to not call me brother. So he came back in later on and he did not want to come into that front door entrance. I don't know, maybe it was because of my energy or something like that. So he went around and went into the other door, and then the black female called him in. I guess she probably conversed with him about his conduct only until after I said something. But any time before that, like, nothing like that happened. You know what I mean? So it was constructive, I think, because he definitely stopped coming around. But whenever he does, he'll speak to everybody or whatever. But, you know, I just had to just let him know that, and I just kept it moving. And that's all I have for now. Thanks for allowing me to share.
Black brother in hell.
Context of white supremacy. Black brothers, black sisters. Man, anti-blackness in the workplace. It is always good to have a code for that and to have an extra heaping of black self-respect to spare. These type of incidents are very common. And the same thing, I guess, that I just said about the importance of maintaining your composure. You don't want to let your emotions get the best of you when responding to suspected racists. The same is true for victims of white supremacy in terms of making sure that we're not, you know, allowing some anti-blackness from a victim to have us all riled up and, you know, not codified in our response. That being said, you don't want to lose too much weight. You look like a crackhead or a crack addict. Think just as you pointed out, like, wow, I'm just trying to munch on a few greens, maybe a few fruits, veggie or two, and now I'm a crackhead. Like, what, I mean, and notice how quickly that happens, where black people get associated with crack, even for doing something constructive that has no relation at all to narcotics. And then we got the other fellow. This sounds more, because we were getting before the office insults last week. It was the white women coming in and, "Did you just pat my butt?" Oh, he, and laughing and joking, hee 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 and ha ha and all that. Now we got more of the traditional elevator insult type thing that Mr. Fuller was talking about. The black guy comes in and, "Hey, boy. What? Oh, you're not. Oh, okay. Let's try. Hey, black brother. That right there is exactly why, if you needed another illustration of why I am not for, do not call me brother, like under any circumstances, because that is about the size of it, where it did not start off brotherly at all. It was total insult. And now, okay, I'll clean. All right, brother. Come on, black brother. Be with me, black brother, black sister, black brother. Oh, I can't call you brother. Excuse me, I can call your sister, black sister, see there, black sister. And she didn't even respond. Don't try to rope her into it. She's probably over there quitting like, oh my God, I'm just trying to get, they're going to break. Oh my God. Like, and this is exactly what this, like I said, this is the elevator insult. This is exactly what Mr. Fuller talked about, where it just ends up being entertainment. If there are any white people who are around and they can just watch all of this, that's why I said you have to be on the money. Codified and have a little bit of extra black self-respect, because some victims we don't have any, so that you're not upset by that sort of thing and calling him and what? Oh, you calling boy? Come on, victim of racism. I'm not gonna sit up here and do that, and I'm also not gonna be called boy and brother and all the rest of it. If you could please call me by my name, thank you kindly. Sir is respectful. I can appreciate. Oh, I can call you sir, but I can't call you brother. See here. See. Thank you kindly, sir. And keep it moving. I'm not going to respond to that either. Like, why? And Kia, what I would be saying to myself, if it's not Dr. Welsing, or the same thing I said before, if you got some, you know, family members, relatives who exemplify black self-respect and kind of, you know, embody like, hey, you know, I'm going to think about this person when I want to make sure I'm behaving myself and treating black people correctly. You can also just be thinking about, hey, white people are most to blame for this. Black male in Florida over the age of 60, you betcha. Dr. Harry T. Moore and his wife, absolutely. Black male behaving like this, the people who are most to blame are all white. Governor DeSantis and everybody else. Let's see. I'll handle him. That went into the violence to protect the white. If he gets out of hand, you let me know and I'll handle him. That's another one where you got to keep your handling. Handle who? What? Keep your composure. That same thing I just said. White people are most to blame for that. And I would even be thinking on that one too. Now imagine a black person in a work context where a white person does something or says something. Imagine a black person having the audacity to, hey, you let me know that Ryan gets out of hand. You let me know and I'll handle him. I don't think so. Courthouse, McDonald's, anywhere else. I don't think so. Let's see. I didn't even know they had such a thing as Asian roaches. I'd have probably had to whip out my phone really quick to see if they weren't, you know, just practicing racism or making up something to see if such a thing even existed. That in and of itself is probably an act of racism anyway. How, if that is like the actual name of a species, but even neither here nor there, for then the roach part to be chopped off anyway, Asians. That was probably why it was intended anyway. And you don't know. She could have been complaining about Asian people. She could have been complaining about the roaches. She could have been complaining about both. And I wouldn't even put it past her to be slick enough that ambiguity is purposeful. That I'm doing this on purpose so that I can talk about Asian people. I can talk about the roaches. And people will be confused. I can get away with all of it because they'll just think, well, maybe she's still talking about the roaches. I would not be surprised if this white woman was that slick. The Popeyes, I have concluded some time ago, I think like fried chicken and sports, particularly like basketball, football. I think those are like the go-tos for whites in a workplace. Maybe President Obama before, but now that he's gone, probably not. But like that's, you know. Negros here. If I can't tell any racist jokes, what I'm going to say? Fried chicken. Yeah, you tried that Popeye's chicken sandwich? All right on. Mm-hmm. What else? Sports. That LeBron is something, huh? How about those Lakers? Yeah, saw the game. All right. I'll catch you tomorrow. And that's it. Sports, fried chicken. Sports, fried. Shame what happened to Coach Taggart, isn't it? Taggart, my fault. At Florida State. Shame what happened to him. It didn't.
Yeah. Well, all right. Got a chicken sandwich last night. Just thought of you. That's all it's going to be. As tacky as that. We'll just look out all the black people in the building and had that Popeye and give you all the details. The pickles were so juicy and thick and succulent. Oh, yeah. What did you think of it? I'm vegan, man. Didn't you see me here eating my salad? I don't. Come on. Come on. That's why I said before, Mr. Steele, we're talking about food, it gets to racism, white supremacy quickly. That's another one. I'd have a reputation for being vegan. Like, do not dare come talk to me about fried chicken or anything else that you think is soul food. Watermelon either. Collard greens, like none of that. Do not come and talk to me about any of that. Sports, even here in Seattle, I wouldn't care if I was the most like addicted NFL fan ever. I would never have a conversation about the Seahawks, what they're doing, what their season is like. That's the same stance I had years that they went to the Super Bowl and what have you. I'm not going to be sitting around, oh, yeah, let's chat it up about good old Russell Wilson and the Seahawks, and maybe they'll get back. Come on. That is, if you're not going to come and talk to me about constructive information, constructive things, we don't need to sit around and waste time and act like we're friends bonding over fried chicken or the pigskin. Much obliged, caller in Florida. Anti-blackness, rampant.
Black brother to hell.
Let's see. The number again, 605-313-5164. Decode 564-943#. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Other folks who dialed in, if you have comments, questions, suggestions you would like to add, feel free. I'll assume folks are good for the time being. No spectating. If we have any suggestions for the smiling situation, any suggestions for what folks would do there. And even if any folks have suggestions, the incident, Black African, where he was talking about where it kind of went down. The white guy said, "You threw me under the bus." A lot of metaphors. You threw me under the bus. And then he said, "Did you see it?" And he was a little reluctant to say because he didn't want to be a witness. Folks have any thoughts about that as well? The Jim Jones metaphors, I did forget for the caller in Florida, not drinking the Kool-Aid. Important. Different context, certainly, but that is even just that we just talked about that. A few days back, for then that to be brought up again, like, wow, important. Anywho, if other folks have any other suggestions, comments they want to make sure that they get in, we should be here tomorrow for the compensatory call-in, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We should also be here on Monday. White woman, Laura Wexler, she wrote the book, A Fire in the Kingbreak, it is about the Moores Ford Bridge lynching in 1946, where four black people were killed, two black males, two black females, one of them a World War II veteran, a black female who was reportedly 8 months pregnant, also killed in the massacre. She gives a lot of detail about the incident. She should be with us Monday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Reading is more important than watching television. You can check out her book between now and then if you want to read, ask some questions. Always great to practice questioning whites. But that's Monday. Laura Wexler. People in Georgia, you should definitely know about the Moores Ford Bridge lynching. If you have offspring, attempted parent, easy opportunity to share about some of your local state history and the system of white supremacy. This case got big attention, and I was giggling. Walter White got mentioned in the frickin' book club yesterday with Paul Robeson. Walter White is mentioned extensively with the Moores Ford Bridge lynching. That's why I say his name pops up all the time. We can ask Laura Wexler about him on Monday. She quotes and what he had to say about this incident and what he was doing with the NAACP to try to address this atrocity specifically. Walter White. Continuing with our assignment. Let's see. Any other folks? No, folks are satisfied. Any other suggestions, comments they want to make sure that they get in? Assume folks are good. I'll check in, give folks maybe another five to be certain if everybody got their comments, questions in. Did I hear someone? Were they just ruffling in the background?
That's me. Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I just wanted to, I think that we do this one on tomorrow, but I got a chance to wear my counter racist shirt. So I'll share tomorrow. Yeah, it was neat. So I'll share. Is that the day when we can just have random conversations on Saturday?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I'll participate on Saturday so I can tell you how fly that was.
I am excited. I am so excited, especially when it seems like everybody's safe. No one got punched or their eye gouged or anything like that. Like everything ended safely. Love it. Enjoy hearing the feedback from the counter racist t-shirts, how white people respond, how other victims respond. Like that is lovely. And that's what it was for, a counter racist experiment. So yes, I'm excited for tomorrow so we can hear what happened.
Okay, super. Thank you.
Yes, that'll be two things. And then I can give more details about the Azure Savage presentation. Whew, that was a lot of fun as well. Ask questions. Workplace context. Ask questions. If they have a training, if you start a new job and they have the orientation and all that, make sure you ask a question and not just, you know, where's the bathroom? Just so that you can say you ask the question. But I mean, really try to think of something that is of benefit, something that you want to know or something that is not clear to you. Ask questions. That is such a key aspect. When you ask questions, you are expressing curiosity. That is driven out of a lot of victims of white supremacy. We need to be curious about things. That's how you get additional information. Sometimes that's how you can draw solutions, and we need solutions. We got a problem. That's how you draw answers, being curious and seeking answers. So ask questions. Get in a habit of asking questions. Anytime that you have an opportunity, training, what have you, that was big for yesterday, just being able to ask one question and getting good at asking one question sometimes, because that might be the only opportunity you have is to get in one good question. Workplace, sometimes you can ask a lot of questions, but get good, be bold, have the courage to ask questions. Let's
see. Yes, and on the subject of questions, to help out with the Black Africans' dilemma at work with being asked to smile, I think asking questions will continue to have him understand where that question is arising from, where the source is. And I think asking questions such as, what makes you say that? And then waiting for input, or saying, oh, I'm sorry, was I frowning? And then waiting for input, or how odd, I certainly don't feel miserable. You know, or that's strange. I feel fine. I'm great today. You know, something like that. And just keeping it very light, or keeping it light on thinking about how to not make too big of a deal out of the comments that he's getting. And just waiting for the responses so that he can understand or delve deeper into where that question is coming from, so that it can be remedied or dealt with in the proper way.
Great suggestions. I like that. Always love it when you can stay in the question lane. Just, where is that coming from? Or, yeah, I'm feeling great. Are you okay? still in the question line, and just real mild response about things with, again, the emphasis, I'm doing great. Just trying to get work done. You doing okay? Everything's good? All right. Yeah, we're great. Getting work done. Great day. Trying to make a little money. Hopefully a lot of money. And just rolling on about it. Let's see if other folks have any other suggestions for any of the different scenarios that were presented. If you have your own situation that you want to make sure you share, if you have any thoughts on how to make sure we neutralize anti-blackness in the best way possible in the workplace. Always think it's grand to just come out and be direct about how you want to be called or addressed, or something is done or said that is incorrect, to just point that out calmly. Cut it at the knees, Walter Beach, as he said. Best way to try to neutralize those situations sometimes. Let's see. I think we nabbed the emails. Folks have about another 2 minutes. If you have any final thoughts you would like to share, if not, we will get ready for the compensatory call-in tomorrow. And Laura Wexler on Monday. I've been reading her book quite a bit. That was what I did. Like, we ran over, did the book event last night, Azure Savage, that ended, and got in a little reading before called it an evening yesterday. It was packed. Wow, what a Thursday. But that is the counter-racist grind. Race soldiers do not take breaks, so try to be consistent in our efforts to solve this problem as well. Unless anybody else has another question, thought, strategy they would like to share.
I guess I just wanted to thank the lady for her suggestion about asking a question, especially the one where she said, asked that the white person, like, are you happy? Like, are you okay? I think that was a great suggestion. Yikes on the crack cocaine comparison. And also there's, I hear this a lot in the workplace, just sort of, it's not the same, but it's references to the gentleman, Stevie Wonder. There's always metaphors. I heard it again, and it reminded me in the workplace. Somebody said something like a metaphor about Stevie Wonder, like, I guess we're being led by the blind, something like that. We're being blindly led. It's like Stevie Wonder. It was a white person. So I always hear those. I don't know. And I hear them in the workplace, but I just remembered that. I was just like, ah, okay. Just making fun of a black male. But yeah, thank you.
That Stevie Wonder metaphor, we had talked about that before, how we couldn't even think of, like, if you just wanted to use that metaphor of, you know, you all the blind leading the blind, you know, Stevie Wonder, if you were, okay, we're not going to use Stevie Wonder. We're not going to use Ray Charles. Who would we use? We had silence for about 60 seconds. And then, all right, and we're not going to use any black person. Who would be the white person that we're going to use in this joke? That right there stood out as odd. Like, really? Is that, we just, Stevie Wonder is just the punch time? Anytime that we want to use a blind person in some random tacky joke about you have some ignorant, incompetent person that is running the show here? Really? That's what Stevie Wonder is reduced to? Or Ray Charles. I hear the same thing with Ray Charles. Even though he's passed, they'll still insert him. Blind, dead person. They'll still insert him to mock someone for being incompetent at what they do. Just paying attention to metaphors. Lots of them in the workplace. Any other folks? Everybody good?
I have a question really quickly, Gus. Just for 1 second. And that is on the upcoming remembrance of the Jonestown massacre on November 18th. And someone did say something about drinking the Kool-Aid, and I think it was a caller from Florida. And I would really appreciate if we could speak on the Jonestown Massacre and Jim Jones and all the Black Fellowship people in his cult or group or sect. I don't know how you would call it. Cult, probably.
Cult.
Yeah, it would be cult, correct. Yes. And so I would really appreciate if we could touch on that perhaps sometime soon. I see a lot of Jonestown references being coming up on my feed and also just everywhere. I just keep seeing it in the news, on KOW, things like that. So I just wanted to ask if we could touch on that sometime.
We were just speaking about that on the compensatory call-in this past weekend. That's why I said the call-in. I think he mentioned it as well, that like it stood out, like, oh, wow, the people mentioned it there. And I wasn't even aware directly that this was the anniversary coming up in a very few days, but time is right and exact. I think we had said last week we were looking at books because I already had one book that was recommended and I was like, oh, and it was written by a Black person too, unless I'm mistaken. I was like, oh, we should try to get her on the program. And then I think Draftomania and several other folks, they recommended some other book because, I mean, this, you know, heavily researched subject matter is books coming out all the time. We were looking at some of the more recent books that have been published. So, yeah, I think it would be absolutely fitting. I was saying then, Dr. Welsing, this was one of her favorite. I won't say favorite. This was an area of study that she thought was important. I'll say it that way. And so I think she definitely would want. I know we talked about it with her in the archives directly on this program and even beyond this platform. She talked about it when she had other engagements as well. So I know she would want serious counter-racist scientists to study this event and how it relates to white supremacy racism. So, yes, that's absolutely. We should devote a little time. And we will be here on the 18th with Laura Wexler on Monday. But Jonestown, yes, more time to come, because I think a lot of folks don't have enough information about why this event is so important to whites. Why someone like Dr. Welsing would say, wow, this is an important event that we should study.
Which books were mentioned to, maybe I could find a way to get to those books. Do you have any of the titles on the Jonestown Massacre and whom you would recommend? I would really like to read a book that was written by a Black observer or one of the people who was just from the Black perspective of the Jonestown experience and things like that. Do you have anyone that I could look up and check out and read to just prepare?
I haven't read a ton of books on this subject matter, even though, as I said, we did mention specific titles going through on Saturday. If you drop me an email or you could just listen to the compensatory call-in, because like I said, a number of different titles were mentioned there. Tim Reiterman, I think, was one that Draftomania mentioned, and there were a few others. And then the Black author specifically, if you drop me an email, I can send you her name, even though I haven't read that book yet, so I can't vouch for, you know, how constructive it is or not. But yeah, we should have an opportunity. If any other listeners, if they already have kind of a list of some favorites that we didn't get to this past weekend, you can email and I'll forward. But yeah, we should have ample study time coming up where we can all kind of dig in and share what we've researched and learned.
Excellent. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Absolutely.
Gus, can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Gus, in regards to Jim Jones, because we was doing the book study yesterday and you were talking about the COINTELPRO, so as we were doing that, I started doing some further research in regards to Jim Jones' connection with the CIA. So I went to the young lady. She can also go to the CIA.gov, research Jim Jones, and there's a bunch of, declassified documentation on Jim Jones. They have newspaper articles and different documentation that's declassified in the CIA files.
if you go to the website. And that's all I wanted to share.
Much obliged, Draftomania. She was with us for the discussion this past weekend, compensatory call-in. Might come up again tomorrow. With that, I would take advantage, if this is being discussed, make sure you tie it back to white supremacy racism and making sure that people know a lot of black people died at that event, were killed at that event, and why that is relevant to what's happening now. Slick talking whites are dangerous.
Well, what I found out too on that Jim Jones thing is that 100 years before Jim Jones actually created that Jonestown settlement, there was another missionary who did just about the same thing 100 years before, say in 1878, and also had a lot of black settlers move to Guyana with him to settle near that area of Guyana. And so that is really intriguing.
So they rehearse and repeat many of their activities. So you have a lot of cult activities in the system of white supremacy. I think we had some other listeners, that was kind of their research project where they were looking at this event and context with others. But this here, workplace racism, I assume everyone is fine with that topic. We will have time to chat about Mr. Jim Jones down the road. If everyone is fine on workplace racism, we will resume this subject matter next Friday. Same time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. I hope folks are working on that pregnancy counter-racist code, because that is important. I am sure some folks, not pregnant now, haven't been, might be in the future, where you are still in a work environment at some portion during that 9-month period. So that is one to think about. Want to be thinking on that in advance, so you don't have to kind of come up with all that while you have a billion other things that you are thinking of during that really significant time period. Much obliged to all the folks for their participation. I hope it was worthy of your Friday evening. I hope we gave out some tidbits that were logical, useful in grasping things that are happening in the workplace and how better to deal with things. Again, make sure that you are already thinking about how you would respond to sexually inappropriate behavior, how you would respond to racist conduct in the workplace, what you would say, what you would do, and practice that. So it'll feel natural. It'll feel like you, something that you would say, and that you already, that way, unfortunately, if the time comes, you'll already be prepared. You'll have some muscle memory with what to say, what to do, how you want to stand, that sort of thing. We'll be here tomorrow. Compensatory call-in, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Tune in. We'll share views, suggestions for solving the problem. Again, we'll be here on Monday as well. Laura Wexler, A Fire in the Canebrake, the Moores Ford Bridge lynching. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. Woo! Let's do everything that we can to preserve our brain computer. In addition to being sober, let's be buckled up every time we are in a vehicle, passenger or driver. Let's do all that we can to minimize contact with race soldiers, badge or no. If you are behind the wheel, no cell phone. Do even just the little things that we can to try to stay as safe as we can and far away from the Amber Geiger's, Daniel Holtzclaws of the known universe. That said, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy, even when they call us black brother. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, brother.
Problem. You're a victim. I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.